Hi, and welcome back to The Stacks, a podcast about books. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and this week for The Stacks Book Club, we are discussing Nobel Prize winner Toni Morrison's debut novel, The Bluest Eye. And Renee Hicks, founder of Book Girl Magic, is back with us again to help unpack all the layers of this classic novel. But first, I want to say a huge thank you to all of you. It's the day before Thanksgiving here in America, and it would be insane of me not to thank this wonderful community for all that we've built here at The Stacks. From sharing the show with your friends, to posting about us on social media, to sending me messages and letting me know what you thought of the show, I have just loved creating this show and getting to know so many of you. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Did you read The Bluest Eye along with us? Do you want a space to talk with other readers about the book and all of the books we discuss on The Stacks? Then join us over on Patreon. Patreon is a website that allows you, the listener, to contribute to the show in exchange for perks. One of our perks is a virtual book club where we discuss the books from the podcast with each other. If you're interested in joining the fun, go to patreon.com/thestacks. The Stacks would be impossible without the Stacks pack, so again, thank you. If a monthly subscription isn't your thing, you can do one-time donations over at PayPal. Go to paypal.me/thestackspod. Do you like nonfiction? Do you wish maybe that you read a little bit more of it? Well, our sponsors over at My Mentor Book Club, they're perfect for you. They're a monthly book subscription. It's all nonfiction books. So each month, two nonfiction books that are brand new releases come to your door. It's always free shipping and you can cancel at any time. Plus, if you're listening to The Stacks, you get 50% off your first box by going to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. I get asked a lot how I read so many books. And one of the tricks for reading is that I squeeze more reading into my life through listening. I listen to books when I can't be reading them. And Audible is an amazing resource for that. Audible is a database of over 180,000 audiobooks. And listeners to this podcast get a free trial and a free audiobook download by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Check it out. Make a little bit more of your reading life. Supporting our sponsors supports this show. So does shopping through the links in the show notes before you buy on Amazon. The Stacks earns a small commission on these purchases, and it comes at no cost to you, so it's a total win-win. Don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, whatever. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, can you just take a moment to rate and review the show? We'd be so grateful. Okay. I'm so excited. It's time to talk about the classic American novel, The Bluest Eye. It's written by Nobel Literature Prize winner and icon, Toni Morrison. This week, we do have spoilers, so pause now if you haven't listened. Read the book, come back, and enjoy this conversation with Renee Hicks about this powerhouse of a book. All right, everybody, we are back this week again with the amazing Renee Hicks of Book Girl Magic.
Hello.
And we, oh, hi.
Sorry.
And no, it's me. I never give anyone time to say hello. We're talking this week for the Stacks Book Club about The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, her debut novel.
Yes.
The book, so if you haven't read the book, we're going to spoil it this week. We're going to go all in. So if you haven't read it yet and you think you might want to read it, pause this, come back later, because it is a really good book and you should want to read it and you should read it and you don't want us to spoil it for you. So read it. And now if you're still listening, that means you've read the book. Yay. Good on you. Mm-hmm. And you know what it's about, but just in case, it's about blackness and beauty and gender and life as a young black girl. And what that means, basically.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of narrated by a girl named Claudia, and our main character is Pecola.
Right.
And let's just jump in. What did you think?
I loved it.
Yeah.
It was my first Toni Morrison read. Let me say that. So I absolutely loved her writing style, and I wasn't sure what to expect from this book at all. I don't even think that I really read the description first before reading it, so I just kind of dove in, but I was pleasantly surprised. Just gave it lots of emotion coming through this mm-hmm. book, which was unexpected for me. I didn't know what to expect from Toni, so I really enjoyed it. What about you? Would you?
I really liked it too. Yeah. I often I've read a lot of classics, white classics, mm-hmm. and I usually am like, this is boring and blah and gotta go, and so I always get anxious when I read classics black classics because I'm like, am I not going to like this? Am I not going to understand it? Because like when I read Pride and Prejudice, I was like, this is garbage. Like,
and I just asked you about that book. Oh, and I was like, should I read that or just go, yeah, to the remix? Yeah.
No, thanks. but like I just couldn't relate to it and I didn't care. And it, also that comes from like a time earlier, like more before than the 70s. Mm-hmm. But still, I really love this book. I felt like her writing is amazing. I can't believe it's a debut novel. Like, imagine if you also published your first book.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, I wrote a book. It came out on the same day as Toni Morrison's. Like,
right.
Good luck, loser.
Yeah.
Never heard of that person because their book wasn't as good.
Right.
So, yeah. And I felt like she is tackling, like, complex form with the book. And she's, like, moving between narrators and mm-hmm. season and flashback and flash forward. And, like, there's so much.
A lot that happens.
Yeah, there's a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's really done well. I mean, obviously, it's a debut novel. And I'm sure when I read her other stuff, which I've never, that I'll find more. And, you know, everyone loves Beloved. So maybe,
I've owned that for a while, too.
And yeah, me too.
Never touched it. So,
but for me, I'm glad I started here because I really like this book. And I'm like, if she only goes up from here, like, this is great.
Yep.
So one of the main themes in this book is beauty and womanness and blackness versus whiteness.
Yep.
And she really, what the book does that's really powerful is that she dances around the same themes over and over and gets at them from different angles and in different ways.
Absolutely. Sorry.
One of the main, like one of the first times we see Morrison start to grapple with beauty is with Claudia, our kind of narrator, and her like white baby dolls and Shirley Temple, and how everybody loves Shirley Temple. And she kind of like goes on this tangent about mutilating dolls. What did you think of that part?
And that now that I remember the cup, the Shirley Temple cup, they kept making references to that. And the other two girls, who was it? Piccola and Frida. They loved Shirley Temple and they loved these dolls or whatnot. And Claudia was just like, nah, I'm not feeling this. Like,
yeah. And she was like, I actually like hate these dolls.
Yeah.
And like, they're cold and they're lumpy and like, they don't look like me. And why am I supposed to like this doll? And like, yeah.
They totally couldn't understand either why she didn't like what's wrong with it. Yeah.
And then it kind of says like kind of offhanded, I later learned to love Shirley Temple, but like even from a young age, cause the girls are like 9 and 10, they're grappling with blackness and whiteness at that age as like beauty and not beauty.
Right.
And Morrison throughout the book kind of uses different words. Like there's a part where she's describing, I believe it's in Geraldine's section. Mm-hmm. She's describing black people and she uses the word like funk, like to get rid of their funkiness and like the funk. And the funk is connected to like sex and like outdoors and it's unclean.
Right.
And it's like kind of this placeholder for blackness and that they need to get rid of it. And it's kind of like this searing indictment on, you know, assimilation, really.
Right.
And she kind of plays with these different ways of showing what the white gaze has done to black people's appreciation of their own blackness.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you, but like, I feel like we're still dealing with that.
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Trying to identify ourselves and where we fit and where we belong. And it's a lot of what Morrison wrote in these is these girls are like, where do I fit in this picture? And the belonging, and being shamed and not, you know, being accepted. Like, who was it? Piccola got it, I think, the worst in the book of being teased and, you know, just being throughout the book, she's just been called ugly by her parents, by everybody.
I mean, from the moment she's born, her mom's like, she has nice hair, but she's ugly.
She's ugly. Yeah. I'm like, your own mother. Like, how heartbreaking, you know, to have your own mother saying those kinds of things. And then she just couldn't catch a break. It was really sad.
She has so sad. And then like there's the pretty girl, quote unquote, Maureen, who is half white. And I mean, our narrator, Claudia, is clearly the smartest person in the book. Like, she gets it. And she talks about how, you know, they're like all buddy-buddy. And then it kind of starts like it's like this weird, you know, kid teasing fight that kind of breaks out between the girls. And then Maureen's basically like, well, I'm pretty and you're not. Like, I'm cute and y'all aren't. And Claudia's like, has this moment of like, I wasn't so much upset that she said it, but that it was true. And like, I was more scared about what does that mean?
Right.
Like, yeah. If she's pretty and we're not, and she's half white and we're not.
Yeah.
Like, what's separating?
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. She just, yeah. Maureen was an interesting character, and she took it there. Yeah. Claudia had a lot to, or even Pecola. And I think it was Claudia who was kind of like, why do you guys like her? Like, she couldn't understand, yeah, like, what is it about this girl? Why are you gravitating towards her? And Maureen, in a sense, what was it? Ice cream that they were going to get. And she was like, well, are y'all going to buy any? And they were hoping she was going to buy it. Right. And she's just kind of like, oh, well, you're on your own. I think she only did it for Pecola because she was just being picked on, right? Yeah. Like, she was trying to make her feel better. And she had just witnessed what Pecola had just gone through. So she was trying to make it better. But you know.
And it was such a weird, like, that she tried to cozy up to her in like a paternalistic way. Like, that it was like, oh, let me go help her and buy her this ice cream to fix it. It's like, and then it's turned on him so quick.
Yeah.
With the quickness.
Like, hey, no.
She was like, don't forget.
Yeah.
Don't forget. I'm rich and I'm half
better
white.
Than you.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I'm better than you. Yeah. And, you know, that whole thing, the beauty and the white throughout the book. And it starts with the doll. And then, of course, you know, the bluest eye, the blue eyes.
Mm-hmm. Which, Wanting them.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get there. We'll save that for a little bit later. Yeah. But that's really like the driving force in the book. Another part of the book that's like pretty intense is like the hatred of women. In this book, it starts with the period in the beginning when Pecola gets her period, and it's like
they're trying to hide it.
They're trying to hide it.
Yeah.
They're trying to hide it.
Yeah.
And that, like, it's, and I think about it now, and I'm like, I remember when I got my period, like, that it was like an embarrassing thing. And
instead of being celebrated,
Right. And like, I don't know. I don't need a period party or anything, but like, I have a friend who had a period party.
Wow.
Her mom threw a party for her for having her period.
Oh my God.
And was like, you're staying home from school.
What?
You're a woman now. Like, breathe the air. You're a woman. And like, I don't know if I need all that, but.
Wow.
That like becoming, like going from girl to woman is like scary and terrible in this world.
Instead of celebrated.
Instead of, or just like acknowledged.
Yeah, that's
true. You know, instead of being like, cool.
Right.
You're here
now. Okay, here we go.
Like, here's the chart of human. Like,
we're
first
trying to hide
baby.
It, clean it up, clean up the stairs, the porch. With,
right.
You know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like, what if like your first period was treated similarly to like your first word or your first step, you know, where it's like, this is a milestone in your life. It's not the only milestone in your life, but it's not something like this should happen.
We don't have to brush it under the rug. Like, we can talk about it and be okay with it.
But it does, like, what is that saying to women? That like becoming a woman is a bad thing or an embarrassing thing.
Right.
Or like, now it's time to feel shame.
Right. Like, let's hide this. Yeah.
And it's sad. Too bad. And then, you know, and that's contrasted with Pecola's friends, the three prostitutes.
Yeah, those were some interesting characters.
China, Poland, and Marie. But then I didn't listen to the book. You did. Do you remember what they called her? The Mago line?
Yes. I'm trying to. I
can't remember. I don't know how it's pronounced, but like, I think it must have been French. I don't know. I'd never heard the phrase before.
No, it was close to what you said. It was like Magdalene or something like that. It was,
Anyways.
Yeah.
So the three of them and like how all, you know, they talk about how they hate men and like they didn't know they could get money for sex and that their mom was mad that like they
didn't get money. Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, because they're like shrewd business women.
Right.
And they, you know, they're like, we never met a man that we liked. Like, we hate from the Jews to the blacks to the Arabs. Like, you know. I just loved them.
Yes.
I thought it was a great depiction of like strong womanness and like friendship.
I love the banter, between them. It's like we're cutting jokes at you and talking to you and Pecola had a lot of questions like, well, what does that mean? Like, where did that guy go? What happened? You know, she's just curious. Like, she's just never seen anything like that. So it was interesting.
Right. And they really loved and supported her. And there was something in that their relationship with Pecola that was like the really only loving relationship she truly has in the book.
Yeah.
Because even though Claudia and Frida are friends with her, it comes out later that they kind of used her to feel better about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of took from her and they allowed her to be the ugliest so that they could feel prettier. Better.
That's
yeah. And these other women, the prostitutes or the sex workers, they were like, nah, girl, like nobody likes us either. It's fine.
Right. Come hang
we're
with us.
Ugly too. We're gross too. We're, you know, tainted too. But
we're going to make money off of our
life. Yeah. But we're also shrewd businesswomen and come hang out with us. Here's our clothes.
Right.
So yeah. I did like them and they provided a little bit of levity while still driving home points.
Right.
Which I mean, I think that's like the complexity of Morrison, that she's able, it's not just like a clown.
Mm-hmm.
So the book was written in 1970.
Yeah.
Which is like a lot of years ago.
Yes,
we're getting on 50 years. Do you feel like it still holds up?
Absolutely. I think there's so many women out there that deal with these kind of issues and feeling less than. And I totally think it's relevant to what goes on today. I think at some point we as women deal with these issues, whether it's, you know, I'm too tall, I'm too short, I'm my skin complexion, my lips, whatever. I think there's something about us that makes us feel insecure and that, you know, we're not as good as the next. So yeah, I definitely think it's relevant.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, one of the things that stuck out in my mind is like this, we're dealing with this right this minute. I've seen it so much in the newspaper, is that Black women don't feel as much pain as white women during childbirth. I mean,
really?
There was like, I'm like the section where the doctor's like, you don't have to worry about her. She's like a horse. They just deliver, like, you know, and it's Pecola's mom when she's delivering Pecola.
Yes, yes, yes.
But just seeing that in writing, being like, wow, this is the same stuff. And I know that to be true. Like, I read that book, Medical Apartheid, and they talk about it in there about, you know, the first doctor to like perform a C-section or not C-section. Anyways, the father of Marion, I think his name's Dr. Marion something.
Mm-hmm.
He was the first doctor to like be a gynecologist, and he practiced on slaves, Black women. And he didn't give them any pain medication, even though they had it, because he, you know, said that Black women don't feel pain and all this stuff. And so this myth of like that Black people are superhuman or that they don't feel pain. And even now, like, there's all these articles, and I'll link to some in the show notes about
Black women,
yeah, how they die in childbirth and how they're more likely to have complications because doctors don't take their pain seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And like all of this stuff in 2018 is on the front of the New York Times and in the New York Times Magazine and whatever. And Toni Morrison was, you know, addressing it in 1970.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's definitely going to have to add that one to my list.
Medical apartheid.
That's crazy. It's been, you know, out there for a while, but I need to get on it because that's so interesting to me that people view us in that way. Like, that's
right. Well, I mean, even Serena Williams, she talked about how she almost died because they didn't believe that her, like, I think she had like a pulmonary embolism, like a blood clot.
Wow.
That could have killed her. And they didn't believe her. And it's like, you don't believe that this woman knows what her body's supposed to feel like. Like, she's one of the foremost athletes in the world.
So is that, this is random, but is that something that they're dealing with like, do they have white doctors that are, so that's what I'm trying to figure out. Cause my doctor was a fellow African-American woman. So I didn't really deal, you know what I mean? With that type of, so I'm just wondering if it's the doctor that they have.
The doctors, I don't think it's exclusively white doctors. I think it's other doctors of color that aren't necessarily Black women, but that this idea has like permeated medicine, not that it's necessarily said anymore, but that people don't believe Black women essentially.
Wow.
And that their pain, our pain, isn't taken seriously, or that people assume that we can handle more pain because of the quote unquote strong Black woman trope, but rates of maternal demise, I don't know if that's right, if that's the right phrase, but women dying during childbirth or complications with childbirth is much higher in Black women than it is in white women in this country. And like I don't know the numbers, but like at a much higher rate.
Wow. That explains a lot, too. When you see these articles, just there was one the other day talking about black women and just how strong we are and how we can't have an outlet. Like, we're expected to be strong mm-hmm. and be strong for the men and the children and everything. And it's like we can't have anybody help us or, you know what I mean? Like, we just have to kind of take it. And it's like we don't really have a voice.
Yeah.
So that there was an article that I read not too long ago. But it makes sense. Like, it's, this goes further back than just, yeah. you know.
Wow. Yeah, totally. Well, even saying that, like having to be strong for the children and the men and this and that, that's kind of like in the book when Pecola and the other girls go to the house that Mrs. Breedlove works in and they spill the pie and the little white girl comes in and she's crying. And like Mrs. Breedlove can't even feel her full rage because she has to go soothe
right.
this other girl.
Yep.
And that's that same thing. It's like the burden of being a black woman is like having to take care of everyone else first yep. and then being the last one to get the attention or the time off or the break.
Yeah, that whole scene made me mad. Especially the fact that this little baby's calling you Polly and yes. your daughter still calls you Mrs. Breedlove.
Right.
And I'm like, wait a minute, you know, Polly? I'm like, what?
Yeah, totally. But then like that, so what Toni Morrison does that's so great is you have that scene first mm-hmm. and then you hear the backstory of Mrs. Breedlove.
Yes.
And you understand that like her whole life, she, you know, like she got crippled at a young age. And so everyone kind of treated her delicately
right.
and like her husband, Choli, or
there's yeah, a, it's either Charlie, I don't know, but
we're
yeah.
having some discrepancy on Choli. Phrases.
Yeah.
Proud to say his name. But anyways, that he like saw her as a person. And so that's what made her like him. And then, you know, kind of fast forward to her working for this white family and that they were the first people to ever like give her a nickname.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was something important to her.
Right. Yeah. She felt some type of way.
Like validated like yeah. by it. And so like when we heard it earlier, it was like, what the, this little baby's calling you Polly? Like, right. nah. But then when you see it later, you realize that like that's something that was important. Like she wanted that
right.
and she'd never been able to get it before.
Right. And I think that's one thing I loved about Morrison's writing is the fact that she would go back. Like we'd see something and then she'd go back and explain the history. Like, oh, okay, this happened and this is why that person's that way. And it's like, oh, okay, you can kind of connect the dots and like, this is why you did that is because
right.
of your life experience.
You behave this
and
way.
That was a running theme in the book is a lot of people were treated people the way that they were treated. It's what they knew.
Right.
So, yeah.
And that, yeah, totally. And I mean, it's very clear that that's, I mean, like if you were going to distill the book down to one point, it's kind of that. It's like that you're treated,
mm-hmm.
you treat others how you were treated. And she says at the end, like the last page, something about love and like love is not for the beloved, it's for the person who's doing the loving
mm-hmm.
and that you like a violent person loves violently, a stupid person loves stupidly, and you love as you are yeah. or as you know, and that the gift of love is for the person doing the loving,
right?
And I just thought that was really interesting. Yeah. You know,
yep,
I you love think that. That it's like you're loving someone else is helping them, but really you're just helping yourself. And yeah. that's why, you know, you have these relationships that are toxic
yep.
because the love languages don't
yeah.
match
yeah.
or so, some, or something like that.
Yeah.
or something. I think that's what she was getting at, but I mean, it's hard to dissect someone who's like so much smarter than you mm-hmm. when you're like, I think that I get what you were saying, but I don't even, that's what I took from it. Like
right.
that there's so much there that a bunch of people could read the same book and take so many mm-hmm. different things from it, which is like.
Yeah. Depending on what your life experiences are too. You
totally.
Know? Yeah. Eye opening.
Yeah. I did a little research about the book.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the most challenged books, according to the American Library Association. It made the top lists like in 2003, 2014, 2015 that people wanted to like basically ban the book.
Wow.
Like it was one of the most challenged books. And with alongside Native Son was one of the other ones. I think Slaughterhouse-Five or Catch-22, I can't remember. But that this book has been banned. The Bluest Eye has been banned in like a bunch of different school districts.
Wow.
And that, you know, parents were mad that it was being assigned. And like, I get it because it talks about rape and like child abuse and all mm-hmm. that stuff. But I also find it interesting that so many books that have been banned are books written by black women.
Mm. That's a very good point.
Yeah, it's like a lot of Toni Morrison, the new Jim Crow, like even, you know, modern day books written by Black women. Yeah. The Hate You Give
is another one. Yeah.
Yeah. I just wonder, I don't know, where do you think that impulse maybe comes from?
That's a tough one. It's just like this thing that's always been against us. I don't know if it comes from insecurity or just not wanting the truth to be told, maybe. I don't know where that comes from, but yeah, there's just like people don't understand. There's so much you can learn from this stuff, and it's like you're not even giving it a chance. You know, let your child or whoever's reading the book, let them decide. Like, let them take from it what they do, you know, right. Allow them that opportunity to be able to do that. But yeah, it's tough to
say.
Well,
you're a mom, so let me ask you this. Because I don't know. And your kids might be a little young for this question, but maybe imagine. I feel like there are so many terrible things that happen to children that can happen to a child. Mm-hmm. For example, Pecola is raped by her father.
Right.
And I understand not wanting your child to know that that's a possibility if that's not something that happened to them. But then I wonder about the other side of that, which is like if other children are experiencing this, do you want your kid to know so that they can be more like empathetic or they can understand? You know, it's kind of a tricky balance.
Right. I definitely agree that it's something that needs to be addressed. It's just how and how in detail do you go about that? Because you definitely want them to know that if this happens, speak out about it. But again, how do you go across doing that? Or do you let them read stuff like that and kind of come up with their own thoughts about the situation? So for me, I definitely think it's a conversation that needs to be had. How I would go about that, I have no idea. But I think it's important because there's so many people that have been sexually abused and don't speak about it and just kind of keep it to themselves. And that's just, as a parent, it sucks. It's a sucky feeling that your child might not be able to, you know, feel comfortable to come to you about stuff like that. So I definitely think that it should be a conversation that needs to be had, but it's like when and how do you do that?
Right.
When do you do that?
And do you want your school district deciding that for you?
Right, right.
But also, do you want your school district deciding for you that your kid has to read this book at a certain age?
Right.
I mean, it's complicated. I think banning books in general is a terrible thing, period. Mm-hmm. Now, do I think that curriculum being decided should take into account like kids and their age, sure, but banning it, it's like taking it out of the school library, like nah, you need to chill.
There's somebody that may be okay with their child reading that or whatever, so
and like it's Toni Morrison,
right?
Like please don't remove her books from the library. What are you doing?
It's against the law,
do it. It's like what are you up to?
Yeah,
but I do think it's an interesting question because I wonder, like, I know some people were assigned the Bluest Eye in high school, and I just, part of me is like, yeah, kids should be reading this stuff because other kids might have gone through it, and like it helps to destigmatize and have these conversations around it. And also, like, it teaches people, like, you don't know what's going on in that other person's life.
Right.
And even if it's not being raped by your father, which is like pretty much one of the most terrible things ever, even if it's just like, you know, getting picked on because you're darker skinned, like, I'm sure there's tons of white kids who don't even know that colorism exists or that there's prejudice. You know, they might just see a black person, you know, or like, I don't know, I don't want to say just white people, but like an Asian person or a Latino person. Like, so I think this book brings up a lot of other really powerful things aside from sexual abuse.
Absolutely.
That it's too bad the whole book gets thrown out with these scenes that are also powerful and important. Yeah. But, you know, every parent, I guess, has their own feelings about their kids and their kids' readiness.
I also wonder, and this is, might be a little bit off topic,
but go ahead. I love off topic.
Like, when, let's say, a white family adopts a black child, how are they having these conversations? Sure. You know, and I think this came up in our book club. Someone had posted asking for suggestions on books that the mother could have her black child, adopted child read. And I was kind of, it was an issue for me because there was certain things that she didn't want to talk about or didn't want to discuss. And I'm like, but this is the reality of that mm-hmm. child. Whether you're their parent or not, they're still going to deal with this kind right. of stuff.
It was something like she didn't want it to be too depressing or right. like have to deal with like race too much or something. Like right. it was like very.
And I'm like, how do you have stipulations? We don't have like we don't get to, you know, define our lives and say, hey, this is a little too much. Like it if it happens, it happens. Like you just. So for her to put stipulations on what this child could and couldn't read, I'm right. like, no, this is a very real thing. Like,
right.
Whether this child reads this book or not, it's going to happen at some point.
Exactly.
They're going to need to know about it. Exactly. So you're trying to put a filter on it. It's not working.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about this a little bit on the episode with Jay when we talked about Between the World and Me by mm-hmm. Ta-Nehisi Coates. Mm-hmm. We talked about – because Jay has a son. And I said, you know – let me back up. The book is written to Ta-Nehisi Coates' son, who I think is around mm-hmm. 15 at the time.
Right.
And I said to Jay, you know, would you give this book to your son to read at 15? And he was like, I mean, sure, but I assume that he would understand a lot more of it by then anyways because mm-hmm. he's a black man in America. So like some of this book seems so basic and inherent to me as a black woman. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure that if a you know, Korean woman read it, they would be like, oh, I had no idea.
Well, even me as a black woman growing sure. up in the suburbs, I had no idea. This, right. These weren't conversations. Like, I mean, I grew up playing a white sport and being surrounded by white people all of the time.
Sure.
So a lot, this is why a lot of the stuff that I'm reading now is so eye-opening to me because I have no idea. So yeah, it's important to have, people might not think of it that way, but it's like, they need to learn this
right.
stuff. Yeah.
Right. I agree. Give this to all your 5-year-olds. It's fine. They'll be fine. Seriously. It's no big deal. They'll get it. It's no
Christmas
big deal.
Christmas gifts. Yeah. Yeah.
They're like reading Dr. Seuss and like Toni Morrison. Yeah. Like, teacher, I'm going to do a book report on The Bluest Eye. Like, right. Timmy, you're 7. Really? Relax. So we kind of touched on the major drama of the book, which is this rape.
Pecola and her dad.
Yeah. Of Pecola by her father shortly after her period.
I had to figure out if that was real. Like in my head, I felt like it was a dream. Like, did this really happen or is yeah. she imagining it? I couldn't. Oh, yeah. And as I read, it was like, this really happened.
Well, they kind of tease it in the intro. Claudia, like the intro's like, yeah, the baby died and Choli's gone and like sad.
And if I'm not mistaken, how he started off in that situation was the same way that he did with the mom, right?
Yes.
The whole biting. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, that was weird.
Yeah. Well, he saw her like scratching her foot against her calf, yep. which I guess is what he saw
the mother
Mrs.
Doing.
Breedlove
right.
doing.
Yeah.
And then it, like the way that the scene is written is phenomenal because
mm-hmm.
it's like she strikes the balance between love and absolute just like disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And she finds a way to make you understand it even as you're like, this is horrible, my stomach hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like not easy to do.
No. Because it's like, I don't want to read this, but I want to read
right.
it. Like I want to, you know,
you're on
edge.
I'm trying to figure it out,
yeah.
but I also hate this because I know exactly where I'm going and this is my nightmare.
Right.
And like, that's the shit that I feel like is like, sure, Toni mm-hmm. Morrison, you're great.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Not anybody can do that.
Right.
And like throughout the whole book, there's moments where it's like so judicious with language. And then sometimes it's really flowery and like mm-hmm. poetic. And she's really like taking you.
Painting a picture. Yeah. It's
taking
beautiful.
You on a journey. Yeah. Painting mm-hmm. a picture. Yeah. That scene
that
is brutal.
Scene, yeah.
Man.
It was. And that's what part of it. I'm like, is this really happening? You know, right
yeah.
now. I was like, no way. No way. And I'm like, yeah, it's really happening.
And then like the mom hates the daughter more because of it, like because
yeah.
this fucked up relationship between sex and blackness and women. And you know, to tie it back to last week, Eloquent Rage by mm-hmm. Brittany Cooper talks a lot about like the church and black women and sex and the mm-hmm. relationship between those things
mm-hmm.
and like this book kind of brings that out in through these characters.
And it brings the mom or the memory of the mom, Mrs. Breedlove, sleeping with Choli.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, does she – because it was almost like they hated each other. But then mm-hmm. you come to this scene where it's like, oh, okay, she's just trying to be quiet for the kids kind of thing. It was
– right.
But, yeah, that really painted a picture too because in my mind, it's like she hates this guy, like, really. But
right.
it kind of shifted and Yeah, that scene was interesting too.
Right. When, yeah. Well, and the scene where Choli loses his virginity to the girl after the funeral.
That one right there in the field. And then the guy, oh man.
So they're in a field and he's losing his virginity to this girl. They're like teenagers. And it's after his great aunt's funeral who raised him. So he's really sad. And then these white hunters find
shotguns
them.
Come.
And they have like dogs and shotguns. And they basically watch and they're like, we want to watch you finish, essentially.
They tried to stop, and he was trying to pull up his pants. He's like, no, finish.
No,
they're
come
like,
on, finish what
boy.
You're doing.
Yeah,
yeah. And they're, it's gross, and it's got all the fear of, like, a lynching is around the corner. And then I guess the dog finds an animal or something,
and
they run
like, let's
off.
Go. Yeah.
And that scene, almost more so than the rape, because the rape was kind of set up earlier, that scene for me was like...
And the fact that he hated, he took all his anger out
on the girl
and not the white men. Like, he's just like, I don't like you. Like, why did, you know, it was all her fault.
Right. It was all her fault.
Yeah.
And like that he carries that kind of like hatred of women with him. Right. Because what happens to you, you carry
it
with
it.
You. Yep. And that's like his thing, that sex is a bad thing and that there's like always a little fear, I guess, around it with him.
Yep.
And he's abusive to Mrs. Breedlove. And one of the scenes also in, I believe in her backstory, is he like hits her or something in front of her white boss that she cleans for.
Yes.
And then the white boss is like, you need to break up with him.
Yep.
And she's like, no, I can't, whatever. And the white lady's like, well, then you can't work here.
Until you do.
Until you do.
Yep.
And I'm not going to pay you the money that I owe you until you do. But like, you can come live here and like, let me help you. You know, show you what's right for you.
Right. She's like, can't you just give me the money and then I'll go break up with him
afterwards?
Like, nah.
But like, to me, that moment felt very pertinent also because it felt like what is going on a lot right now in like feminism with white lady feminism and like how that interacts with blackness. The example that it's not really feminism, but an example that's been top of mind for me is the Lana Del Rey and Kanye beef. Are you familiar with it? So, you know, Kanye's been acting a fucking fool.
Right.
And, like, he's hanging out with Trump, and it's my nightmare.
Yep.
Because I love Kanye's music, but now I have to, like, I can't even listen to it.
Can't
it's all
it.
Ruined. It's my nightmare.
Yep.
And, obviously, a lot of people are upset about it and, like, have had a lot to say. But Lana Del Rey decided to, like, take to Twitter to kind of bash Kanye, which is, like, fine. But there's also a part of it that's like, Lana Del Rey, where have you been when all these other white people have been acting a fool?
Right.
Like,
that's
it's
true.
So
now you
easy
want to, speak up.
To attack a black person when they're down.
Good point.
And it's like, it's just something that I've been thinking a lot about, that it's like there's this pile on. The same thing, and Brittany Cooper talks about this in her book, about when we talk about Bill Cosby. Like that he, it's easy for people to hate him. But he's doing the same despicable stuff that so many white men have done.
Yep.
And not to excuse him at all, but my feeling is that he and everyone else who has acted like that should be publicly shamed, not just him.
Right.
Same
right.
thing with Kanye. Like, it's not that Lana Del Rey is attacking Kanye. It's that where has she been when her own people have been doing the same garbage? Because 53% of white women voted for and supported Donald Trump. So I haven't heard her yelling at 53% of the women.
Right.
So that's kind of like, you know, that.
Like, where have you been? Yeah.
And that's that same thing in this book, is it's like, it's so easy for this woman who Mrs. Breedlove works for to say, you know, he's so bad and let me tell you how you need to live your life as a black person. But like, these are the same women who support, you know, the patriarchy and white supremacy that started by white men.
Right. Like, you're not stopping that, but.
Right.
You want to interject here.
You want to interject here. And you want to put your stipulations. And you want to micromanage my personal life. And like, if I show up and clean your house, I show up and clean your house. Like, give me my money.
Don't get in my
bitch
business.
Bitch better have my money. Like,
right.
I just... So that kind of stuff is like where I'm like, this was written in 1970, but like it could have been written today because the same shit, the same white lady do-good feminism thing.
Did Lana have a response to that?
I don't know if anybody. I don't know if anybody backlashed her that hard. I don't know, to be honest.
I'm interested to see what she would say to that. Because really, where were you?
Right, like where were you with Roseanne?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good, great example.
You know, like there are so many people who have said dumb shit, and like, not to excuse Kanye's dumb shit because
he does it all the time.
Dumb shit. Yeah. Like, what are you doing, my guy? Right. Shut up and take that hat off. Yes. My God. You look ridiculous. Yeah. And read a book.
He's killing it. Killing that hat.
Yeah. I mean, the hat is like lost its meaning.
And then
meaning.
Wearing a Kaepernick sweatshirt.
Oh, he was?
Yeah. The week before, he was wearing the hat in a Kaepernick sweat. Like, it said his name, Kaepernick, on the sweatshirt. I'm like, how are you wearing both of those at the same time? Complete opposite. They go against each other. Like, what are you doing? Trying to say you support this, but you support this too?
Yeah, you can't support both things. Yeah. I mean, I guess you can, but you lose validity if you do. He's just dumb. He's dumb, and it's so sad because his music's so good, and I just wanted to be able to listen to it on my own and be happy and groove out.
He's a musical
out.
Genius, but
I know. But like,
just think that could have been president. You remember with that when he was like he was going to run?
He still probably is going to try to run. My nightmare. You do not have my vote.
Right.
Like, God.
Can't even.
Yeah, it's exhausting to me. But Lana Del Rey, come tell me what you think about my criticism. Yeah,
seriously. We want to know. The people want answers.
We want to know. I know what we have to do. We have to talk about Audible. Since you listen to this book on audiobook, that's good to know.
Yes.
But Audible is an audiobook database. They have over 180,000 titles. Listeners of this show, you get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download, and that both those things are free.
Yes.
So that's nice. And if you've never listened to an audiobook, they're kind of great.
Yeah.
They're kind of great. It's a great way to learn, and there's so many different kinds. Like, some people love a really sweeping fiction story on audiobook. I prefer like more like a memoir where the author reads it.
Yes.
That's like my jam for audiobooks, but I've listened to some other thing. Like, I listened to Station 11. Do you know that book?
Mm-hmm.
It's like real fiction. It's like an apocalypse book.
Oh, wow.
And it was good. The woman who reads it had a really soothing voice, and her real life name was the same as the main character's name.
Wow.
Kirsten. So at the end, when she was like, da da da, Kirsten did this, and then she's like, this book has been written by Kirsten.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, same name. But yeah, so go to audibletrial.com/thestacks for your free trial and your free audiobook download. Yay.
That's awesome.
I like
free stuff.
Yeah, free is good. So easy too. Okay, let's talk about the ending. So, well, we'll tie it in with the title. The title of the book is The Bluest Eye. And in the end of the book, After she's been raped, after Pacola's been raped,
it is after. Mm-hmm.
She goes to the town soothsayers /
crazy
like,
man,
crazy con man. His name is Soaphead Church.
Yes,
and people go to him and like ask for help and advice and like fix my marriage. And Pacola goes to him and says, "I would like to have blue eyes."
Yeah,
and he's like, "Yo,
okay."
He's like, I super can't do this. So what he does is he gives her some dog food that's been poisoned and says, feed this to the dog that he hates. Mm-hmm. And if the dog, something happens to the dog, you'll get your blue eyes.
Right.
So the dog dies. And then she basically goes crazy.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know for sure if she has blue eyes or not.
Yeah.
And so there's this scene where she's talking to herself.
Asking, how pretty are they?
Like, yeah.
Are they the bluest of the blue? And all? Yeah.
I can't look at the sun. It hurts too much. And then the other part of her is like, I can look at the sun just fine. And you realize that like this is, she's gone crazy. And part of it is also because of the trauma she sustained by being raped by her father and losing. Then she then gets pregnant and loses the baby.
Yep.
And everyone in the town is talking about her.
Talking about it, yeah.
And I think that's part of it, is that she can't tell if people are talking about her and being nice to her because of her blue eyes or because of this trauma.
What's happened, yeah.
So she, like, goes crazy and, like, basically spirals out. It's very sad.
Yeah.
It's not an uplifting ending.
Yeah. It's one of those you had to take, like, a double take at the ending. Like,
I had to reread
Who
it.
Is she talking?
Yeah, I had no clue.
At first, I thought she was talking to one of the sisters at first.
Yeah.
Like, she's having a whole conversation about
me
these
too.
Eyes. I'm like, oh, they're such pretty blue eyes. Like, who are you talking to? Yeah.
Right, because it's confusing because sometimes it switches, like, because it's italic and then not. And sometimes you think that you know who's talking. And then, yeah, when I went back, I was like, oh. I feel like maybe I read somewhere that that's what had happened. So then I went back and read it and I was like, I got it.
Okay.
But the book's so complex. Like, I feel like this is a book that I could reread a few times and still be unpacking.
Yep.
Because, yeah.
So many hidden messages and things you need to think about. or will make you think about, rather.
Right. And the book ends, I believe, with Claudia kind of talking about her realization that, like, everybody used Piccola. Nobody really loved her except for the prostitutes and possibly Choli.
Yeah.
But that, like, his kind of love
was different, was
toxic, and that he loved her the best that he could. And that there's
what he knew.
Yeah, it's what he knew. Treat exactly. people.
That's
the you treat that people theme. How you've been treated. Yep. But yeah, that this ending is like realizing that her trauma is kind of the whole town's trauma, and that
because everybody spills on her. I mean, every from her part, she didn't have that. Well, like you said, it was like very few people that really truly, other than those prostitutes. That really had her back. Even your mom, when you're born, and it's like, yeah, you're ugly.
You're ugly.
She's got some pretty hair, but
and then Geraldine's son, who tries to rape
that
her.
Whole thing. I wanted to punch him in
and
the neck.
And then kills a cat.
Yeah, and then blames it on her. She did it. I'm right. Like,
and the cat had the blue eyes.
Yeah, that was so sad. Yeah.
So, like, what did you think of the title?
I didn't know where that was going at first, and then in the beginning, they have a conversation. Right, it's the two friends talking. Mm-hmm. About wanting the blue. So I was like, where is this going? Like, what does it have to do with, you know, blue eyes? And it kind of made sense that this little girl's grown up feeling ugly, and this is the one thing that she feels like is going to change her life. So it made sense after reading, you know, the book, and this is what it boils down to, is this is what makes her happy, at peace, I guess. Or she feels like it will.
Like, or like make one. People like her,
yeah.
See her differently. It's kind of like, just you saying that made me think of like Instagram, like models or whatever. Like the modern day version of this book is like a little girl on her Instagram seeing all these like pretty skinny blonde girls with blue eyes, instead of it being a baby doll, but that they're like aspiring to
be like that. Yeah.
These influencers.
Yes.
Yep. Fuck. They should make it a modern day bluest eye.
They should.
I mean, it's all Someone the same shit. It's all the same stuff from when the book was written. And I believe the book takes place before the 70s. Like, I believe it's like the 40s or 50s. But it's all the same stuff then that we're dealing with now. It's just on an iPhone.
Right.
Or, you know, on Different a movie form. Screen or whatever. But it's the same, like, media saturation of, like, beauty.
Aspiring
and value.
To be something else. Yeah.
Yeah. When will we learn?
Maybe never. I don't know.
I mean, honestly, you behave the way that you've been treated, and like black women get treated like shit still. So like, I don't see it changing until that changes.
Right. And I see a lot of people that I've talked to, you know, even just the color of their skin. Because I didn't grow up, you know, dealing with that kind of stuff. So to hear other women say, yeah, I was teased because of X, Y, and Z, and I'm like, really? Like, growing up feeling insecure because you're a shade, something you have no control over. Right. And I think that was another thing that was talked about in the book, is that people hated and picked on Piccola because of something that she had zero control over.
Nothing to do with
her. Like, you hate this girl, call her ugly, and don't want to be friends with her. She didn't ask to be this way. Like, this is just what it was, and people couldn't see that. They just...
Right.
Saw an ugly girl, and that's, you know, she was the butt of all jokes.
Right. See, this is why we need kids to read this book, so that they know to be nicer to people.
Right. That's true.
Just be nice to her. And she doesn't need to have blue eyes and go crazy.
That's it. Yeah, it's sad.
Well, is there anything? Well, I guess normally we cast the movie. Do you have any people that you could think of being in it?
Wow.
It's kind of hard because it's children actors, right? And I don't know that many. The only kid I know for sure is Diane from Blackish.
She could be a good one.
I feel like she would be Claudia.
Yeah. That's what I was like.
Yeah, you definitely need her as Claudia. But I don't really know. Like, I like Googled around for some kids and I saw some like little black girl actresses, but like, I don't know them from anything.
Yeah.
Like, I just know, like, you know, I'm sure there are some. Maybe our amazing listeners will send their ideas of who they would cast.
Yeah. Even down to the prostitutes, like all the different characters.
There's so, I mean, that's the other thing. It would be like a total black excellence film because you could, I mean, of course, there's a part in it for Regina King. There's a part in it for Octavia Spencer. Like,
what did you think is Choli?
I had a really hard time with that.
Maybe someone creepy like Terrence Howard or somebody, because he can play
But I feel like he's too old. What about, do you watch Atlanta?
Yes.
What about Paperboy? Paperboy. He's a really good actor.
Yeah, that was.
He might be
a good
trolley because he's kind of because like they're young parents,
right?
Like they couldn't be much older than 35,
right? Yeah, back in that day, they were popping them out.
Well, and I'm pretty sure that Choli and Mrs. Breedlove, Polly, got together pretty young,
right,
too.
They did.
So, yeah, like, these are 20-30s, not...
Yeah.
Terrence Howard's too old, but yes.
Yeah.
In an earlier
Someone
version.
Someone like him, but...
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Because he has that... He plays that creepy bad guy kind of, you know... Yeah.
Yeah, he does play that bad guy. I know. I was having a hard time coming up with people. But yeah, Choli definitely has to be someone who has like the darkness in them.
Yeah. Like a Danny Glover on Color Purple.
Yes. Right? Yes,
type
exactly.
Darkness. Yeah.
Ugh, so good. Well, do you have anything else that you want to talk about from this book?
I think we covered most of it. The only thing I want to talk about maybe is Soaphead.
Oh, yeah.
His backstory. Who was he? Because they talked about him growing up, right? Who are his parents? I was confused at that.
I think his parents were just
random.
Yeah,
people?
I don't think he was connected like through relations.
Was
to
he
anybody.
Mixed though?
No,
or no?
I don't think
okay.
so. I think he was fair skinned.
That's
West
what it was.
Indian.
Then. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was fair skinned, and he was gay, and then he. To fight that, he molested little girls.
That's right. The church girls.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Yeah. And he was trying to, he was having a conversation with God, was it?
Yeah, like trying to justify. He like wrote a letter about what he did to Pecola and also justifying the girls by being like.
If they didn't like it, they wouldn't come back kind of
right.
thing. Right.
Yeah. And like.
It was really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, that's that. Yeah. Because he was kind of a creeper.
Total
too.
Creeper.
There was a bunch of creepers.
Totally. A bunch of them. It's a good book.
Yes.
Read it if you haven't. If you made it this far, we just spoiled everything about the book. So sorry, but you should still read it. We're not doing nearly as good of a job as Toni Morrison does.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's such a short book. Like the economy of language, like writing this short little piece of like power
mm-hmm.
is really impressive.
Yeah.
I'm always impressed when books are short and really good.
Yes.
Well, all right. Thank you for being here.
No
I'm so
problem.
Glad you came on and talked about this book with us.
Yes.
And we'll be back next week with a special guest. Yay. All right. Thank you guys so much. And we'll see you in the stacks. Okay. That does it for us this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. And thank you to our guest, Renee Hicks of Book Girl Magic. I also just want to say thank you one more time to all of you for supporting the show over these last few months. I couldn't imagine having a better community of listeners and readers. For those of you celebrating, I wish you the happiest of holidays. And for those of you who are not, just have a great, wonderful rest of your week. Remember, you can support the show by being a member of the Stacks Pack. And you can join us for our virtual book club discussion of The Bluest Eye by just going to patreon.com/thestacks. Thank you to our sponsor, My Mentor Book Club. Go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks for 50% off your first subscription box of nonfiction. I'd also like to thank Audible. Get your free 30-day trial and free audiobook download by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music comes from Tegirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas, and I'll see you all in the stacks.